Hello and welcome to episode 100 of the Drive the Green podcast. We made it, boys. 100.
We did it.
I'm your host, Matty B, joined as always by Bronel and Harv. On this episode, our 100th episode, we have Graham Dillette on the show. I said it was going to happen, and it happened.
You were promising that for a while.
For a while.
And
didn't look good for a bit.
Didn't look good.
Thought it was all talk, but calls, you delivered.
Made some calls. Had some things fall into place. Graham Dillette's on the show. We just taped the interview. It's Monday night. It's right after Pebble Beach. Nick Taylor wins AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am.
Our explicit rating is back.
We fully embrace if you're... So before we get started, we've always been a little bit tame on the F-bombs on this show. Maybe for the next 100, we might have to embrace the F-bombs because there's a lot of them in our interview with Graham.
So what?
Boys let loose. We're having fun. We're excited. If you're new to the show, we are sponsored by Player Golf, PLYRGolf.com. Use the promo code normally, Drive the Green, for 30% off your order. But talk to the player guys today. They said, you know what, boys? It's your 100th episode. We want to do something special for your listeners. So DTG100, promo code DTG100. Get the 30% off. If after the 30% off, your order is over $75, they're throwing in a sleeve of, I'm assuming not Warbirds.
Yep. Pinnacles.
Pinnacles, maybe. A sleeve of balls.
They're better
so
than
that means you get $12 sleeve of balls plus your 30% off. I mean, you're silly not to do
plus
it.
Plus you're getting great quality gear. Golf gear.
I wonder if it's going to, like, if it has, like, the player logo, like the golfer man logo.
Sure it does.
Like, that'll be a sweet, that'd be a sweet golf ball to lose.
DTG 100 promo code. Sweet golf ball to lose in the bushes.
Yeah.
Also, if you're here and you are new to the squad, we finally, after 100 episodes, created our own pod Twitter account.
A main one.
We've always used our own. I usually retweet it or tweet it off my own at Matty Ballgame 5. But now we have Drive the Green Golf. Drive underscore the underscore green on Twitter. I'm so rattled that I have to put underscores in there, but I didn't know what else to do. And B, I'm even more mad at what is it, Rick?
Jack
from, I don't know, Wisconsin, who's got Drive the Green, at Drive the Green. So I've reached out to him. I'm going to hopefully buy it off him for nothing.
He's got like 8 followers.
9 followers, 20 tweets. It might cost us a lot of money to get that off.
Sounds more like a Rick.
He knew. So whatever that guy is, Jack, hopefully we can get at Drive the Green. But until then, at Drive underscore the underscore green. Follow us on Twitter. I think we're up to like, well, that's not important. But follow us on Twitter. Follow us
and
on Instagram.
Yes.
More importantly, I know a lot of you are here for Graham Dillette, which is fine. If you like the pod, please go on, subscribe, like it, rate us, tell us what you think, send us a message. Let us know, because we don't know unless you tell us. So we're excited about the first 100. We got Dillette on today. Nick Taylor just won. Tell us what you think.
This is, now that you mentioned that, this is really like grinding my gears a little bit, that guy has, like, it's a random guy who doesn't really tweet about golf, has decided to pick the handle Drive the Green.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's stupid. That's like the equivalent of some nerd having like Pussy Crusher 69. Like, it makes no sense. We're explicit now. What are you? What's the problem here?
We always were.
But yeah, that is a very good example of what Randy or
the
what
restraints
is his name?
Are Rick, off. Jack? It's gonna get wild here now that I've let. I'm allowed to let loose.
Dillette got us going. The juices are flowing. We just finished taping that, and I can't wait to get it in the pod.
Yep.
But before that, before we get into all that stuff, obviously we're going to recap Nick Taylor. Then we're going to have the Dillette interview. Then we're going to read the news. We're also a member of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network, presented by Kinexus, here for all you Saskatchewan listeners, here for Graham Dillette. Shout out to Kinexus. But we can't get into all of that without pumping our own tires just a little bit for the new listeners. If you haven't followed us, we got some stats for you for our first 100 eps.
Yep.
Bronel? Take it away.
Yeah, well, like, we've had how many PGA pros on?
I don't know. 20?
Yeah.
I don't know. You're the one that did the stats.
Okay, here are the stats. Unique guests, 40.
40 guests.
PGA wins, 14.
Okay.
Professional wins, 57.
Oh.
Genders, 2.
Nice.
Career earnings, $121 million $189,279.
Okay.
Countries, 4.
Mm.
World Long Drive Champions, 3.
Yes.
Oscar winning actors, 0.
Oh.
Hmm.
So, none. You didn't quite get that one
yet. Wrestling personalities, 1. Since we're half wrestling pod.
The coach. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, we've had, I think of those 40 unique guests, I think over 20. Like, we pretty much have every Canadian that's played on the PGA Tour other than Mike Weir.
Yep,
pretty now, much.
Yep.
Every Canadian. So if you're into Canadian golf, go check them out.
David Moreland.
No, David Moreland.
Or Dave Barr.
Dave Barr. But every current one.
Ian Leggett. Man, there's so many.
Every current one except for Mike Weir. So he's on, we're not waiting until 200. Maybe 125, maybe 150, but Mike's coming on the show.
And hopefully our next takedown is Brooke Henderson.
Yeah, and Brooke's got to come on the show. So we got lots lined up.
Yeah.
But again, we've had a lot of success, and it's all capped off by episode 100 with Graham Dillett.
Yep.
But before we get into that, we normally recap our weeks on a regular show. F-all happened this week.
It's February in Saskatchewan.
We need an update. We need an update.
Okay, I'll give you an update.
It's February 10th.
February 10th.
And I need to hear this update.
So
it's 40 days into the year.
To recap, I'm tracking my alcohol intake for the year.
Day by day.
Let me check my note here on my phone of New Year, same me. That's what I've called the note. So it was 48 in January, 31 days. Let's see. What is today?
The 10th.
Today is the 10th.
Carry the one.
29.
So 77 in 40 days?
Well, if you want to say it like that, it sounds bad.
Well, that's what it
I've had some events.
I mean, it's 2 a day, but whatever.
Yeah. I've had events.
Ice fishing.
Yeah, we went ice fishing. I had 2 in the afternoon. Then we went to a hockey game after that. I had 4 more. No, 3. 3. So there's 5 on that day, and I had 7 the day before because I had our local hockey team had their Hall of Fame banquet. I had to have 7 at that.
Had to, yep.
Yep, so there's 12 7. In 2 days. It adds up.
Yeah,
adds
you know up. Who justifies it? Alcoholics.
So, and then obviously this is episode 100, so I have to have a beer today.
Yep. I suppose, yeah.
So, yeah, that's really all the week was.
Are you done?
Said it. We had fishing. Bronell's got some news for the listeners.
What?
Saturday, what happened? Life milestone for you.
Oh, caught my first fish.
He caught his first fish ever. He's 34 years old.
Yeah. What a
ever?
Loser, hey?
Like, ever?
Ever, ever.
And it was ice fishing. He's never, have you ever been outdoor, like summer fishing?
Once when I was like 10, trout pond.
And you didn't catch a fish there?
I used cheese as bait.
Absolutely. Yeah,
didn't
that's
get
a big thing.
Didn't get any.
So you went.
Sucked.
You went to a trout pond where there's hundreds of stock trout, and you still couldn't catch
one. I don't think there was any in
there. You are one pathetic loser.
So here's the big thing.
I'm certain there was none
here
in there.
Here's the big thing. Did you take the fish off your hook?
He did not.
What do you mean?
Like, you pulled it out of the ice water, and then you held it, and you took the hook out, and then you threw it back in the hole. Did you do that?
No, I didn't do that. No. I was too busy taking pictures of it.
I'm still working up the courage to not
have those framed yet? Because that's a milestone event. Like,
no, he didn't. It was actually a keeper, too. Good perch. Yep. But yeah, he did not. I'm like 50-50. If it's cold, I'll wear a glove to take the hook out. Like,
yeah, that's fine.
Hold the
but
fish
still
to get a good grip. I just hate when you're holding it and all of a sudden they put their fin up at the back and poke your hand and they drop it, flopping all over the place. My kids were there screaming all over.
How are you holding this fish, man?
I don't know. I just grab it as hard as I can.
Your 7-year-old daughter was holding the fish, though, and we weren't.
Yeah, and then she'd drop it and start screaming everywhere. It was a nightmare.
That happened back in the
hole. But it was only minus 1 degree Celsius, so we actually had a nice day to do it so your feet don't freeze while you're fishing on open holes. So it was good.
Yep.
It's a good day. All right. We want to talk about it?
Let's talk about Nick Taylor. Let's do this.
Nick Taylor. He knew it was episode 100. We've had him on the show before. To celebrate, he won at Pebble Beach toe-to-toe with Phil Mickelson. Like, does the story get any better than that?
He won wire-to-wire, if that makes it better.
I guess that
first
that,
Canadian to do that since 60?
1960, yep.
Yeah.
Unreal. And when he took that early lead, first thing that crossed my mind was, shit, I almost had him in my DraftKings lineup, but I went with someone else. Second thing was, can he do it?
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, which round is he not going to lead if he's going to win this thing? And then he just wire to wire.
Yep.
So, I was concerned Sunday. I will admit that. I was very concerned. Not
when
so
it got
much,
to like two strokes?
Even just at the start of the round. Mm. I don't know if it was going to be Phil, but
was only
I was
one
just
going into the final round, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. I so was just concerned, but I'm glad he pulled it out.
Well, when we had him on the pod, episode 87, I believe,
yep.
he said Pebble Beach was his favorite track
yeah,
on
so
tour.
So. Glig said that too last week.
Yeah.
But it was funny that when Taylor's on the show, we essentially say to him, death, taxes, and Nick Taylor finishing 25th to 37th.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I mean, I really got to work hard to change that. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I guess he did it.
Yeah, you'd think he might have thrown in like a top 10 first or something, or top 5, but nope, yeah. straight to a win.
Yeah, and that, what was that crazy stat? I mean, he's 229th in the world, or was, because
yep,
now
229th.
He's never going to see the top, outside of the top 150 for
yeah, he's
a long
101
time.
Now.
101.
Yeah.
But how are you 229, you've had your card for 6 straight years.
Yeah.
Just goes to show, death taxes and him finishing somewhere in the middle.
Yep.
Yep.
Enough points to get inside the top 125, but not enough to gain ground in world rankings.
Yep. Have a good week this week. Maybe get inside the top 100. We'll have 3 in there.
We'll talk about the Euro Tour win in the news, but the guy who won the Euro Tour was 227 and Taylor was 229. Both guys that won this week.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Anyone can win.
Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah. Weird. Two things that I noticed. Why does this caddy have a Bruins yardage book?
Ugh.
Like that's
fan of the team, I guess.
And then I noticed Taylor's.
Bold. There's a bold. Bold statement.
Maybe, I don't know. Probably American. But Taylor's yardage book sits out of his pocket and has like and Taylor like right on the part that's showing. And I figured that's by design because no one in their right mind knows who that guy is when they're watching him. And then they just see his yardage book that says it and Taylor.
Well, most we know.
Yeah, we do.
Well, we
Canadians
do
know who
and
he is.
Everyone does now.
Everyone yeah. does now, but people watching walking there probably have no idea who this guy is. And yeah. then they just see, oh, who's that? Oh, well, he's bending over. Nick
he's
Taylor.
He's a notable player now. Did you see that picture I sent?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The notable players in the field next week.
Genesis,
Rory,
notable players.
Rahm, Tiger, Brooks, DJ, Nick Taylor.
Yeah.
Like this tournament should almost been worth 3 in our bets. Like it's a big tournament.
It is a big tournament to win.
They're,
I mean, obviously he gets
the way
all
we
of
set it up,
next
can't
one's big
be.
Too.
Yes. Yeah.
He's got all of the
needs to be adjusted next year.
The things that come with the win. You know, now he's got the exemption, gets to play in the majors. Huge. Because now with those majors come the FedEx Cup points, world ranking points, all that stuff. Not going to see outside top 150 for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, and further to that, just going toe-to-toe with Phil.
What a way to win it.
What a way to win it. Like, final group.
At
guys like, won 5 times, 6 times?
On that track, yeah.
Phil like, was not happy with that round.
Oh, he wasn't happy with it.
Like, he was off the green before Taylor had shook everyone's hands. Like, he was gone.
Just not happy.
They showed, like, an aerial view, and he was, like, off the back of the green, and Taylor was still shaking everyone's hand, and the reporters were coming out to interview him, but Phil was already gone.
Sore loser.
Friend of the pod, Joel Damon, stuck around and
mm-hmm.
congratulated Nick. At
the end. One thing I will say, Nick Taylor said we were playing Mario Kart for sure this year at the Canadian Open. I cannot wait to play with the AT&T current AT&T Pebble Beach
what
Pro-Am
I don't like
champion.
Is that's all anyone talks about him when he's doing interviews and stuff.
They brought up Mario Kart again?
Yeah, absolutely they did.
Aww.
They asked him, they did a whole
his Twitter
thing.
Says he's a top 5 player in the world.
Yeah, that's his
They asked him and
though.
He was
given
like tips. He's like, don't even come at me if you don't know how to drift and stuff like that. Like it.
Fun fact, Mario Kart was released in North America 23 years ago today.
That is a fun wow. fact. Not so fun fact. I mean, I'm happy he won. Don't get me wrong. But the fact that he won now.
Where are you going with this?
Well, the fact that he won now. Now he got interviewed on CBS about Mario Kart. So now when we play him in Mario Kart, it'll be like, oh, those guys just did it because they found out after he won.
Right.
Like we had this set up before.
Well, if the timestamp the yeah. interview and
like we,
lead into that. Like
yeah.
We did this first. Just
yeah.
like
episode 87. Yeah.
Just like how one of us plucked Lanto as a future winner before it ever happened.
You did do that.
Yeah.
But there's lots of little nuggets in this show.
Like Phil, should we talk about Phil at all?
Yeah,
like
we got a few things. Well, obviously, I mean, we got to touch on a few things before we get to Graham. Yeah.
Just
the big one. He's essentially like he's dropped so far down like he's just Bubba Watson now. You see how he was standing off the tee box to hit that shot?
Oh, he's worse than Bubba.
Oh, yeah, he's worse, but he's just the gimmick like Bubba now. Like, standing off the tee box to cut the corner, just like Bubba lined up straight sideways that time in Asia. Like, it's...
When guys do that, I just shake my head and
You can't tell me it's that big of an advantage. Like,
change the channel.
Like, he was standing in the rough.
Yeah. Like, it had to be, the ball had to be above his feet.
It wasn't like it was just fairway or, I mean, tee box on that side, too.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it go a little bit too far. But he was having the hardest time hitting greens, like when he hit it way past just so he could do another flop shot. And
he does it on purpose.
Yeah.
He wants to be in the spotlight hitting those flop shots.
Did you see those pictures of his wedges? Like, they're obviously custom built, but they look weird. Like, they're so thin at the bottom, like where the hosel touches.
It doesn't say big, wide anything on the bottom either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
no bounce. So do you think, speaking of him doing it on purpose, I think he does too. But it did seem like downwind. Talk to our buddy David Dubay after to see how his round went. Yeah. Obviously playing in it.
Conditions were tough, man.
Conditions were tough.
Yeah.
Conditions were tough.
That's a brutal impression.
So he said it was like next to impossible to hit a green downwind. Obviously, into the wind, holds the ball up a little bit, can land softly, but downwind.
Yeah, it was.
And then when you got on the greens, man, they were quick.
Yeah, the greens were very tough there.
There were some guys hitting those putts downhill, and it was like, that thing ain't even getting close to the hole, and then it went past.
Some of the yams.
some of the yams.
I did like the one shot they got of Larry Fitzgerald, and he just bladed it out of the bunker over the back of the green.
The only bad shot he hit all day.
And then he won the tournament on the pro
side. Won the whole darn thing.
Yeah. But we talked about it with Graham Dillette, but the wind just baffles these guys.
Yep.
And it looked windy for a PGA Tour event. It's a calm day here. That's just your average day.
Just another
golfing in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, some guys are starting built for it.
And I think Nick Taylor hit 15 bunkers yesterday.
He hit a lot of bunkers. He hit a lot of fairways. Like, he hit a lot of fairways early.
Trying to hit one on every hole. But
he had that big old speed wobble for a few holes and then reeled it back in with a chip in on 15 or whatever lights out.
To come back after the double on the par 5 14th with that chip.
You know how he's not a big name player yet? He didn't get the gallery backboard on that one where he hit the snap hook. It just bounced like right through the gallery.
And hit the lady walking in the back of the leg.
Yeah, and then sitting over by the tree, he had to punch out.
Right.
But Phil, with his solo thirds, up to $7.8 million won at this tournament.
At this tournament.
He's got more than the next two guys combined.
Yeah. And it's not like DJ's been bad at this tournament.
No.
Like, it's pretty crazy. I mean, how many times have you played it now? 20?
Probably.
21?
But he needed, I think he needed T2 or better to get into the top 50.
Yeah, T2 would have gotten him in
T2.
The top 50.
Yeah, third. Solo third. Oh, damn shame.
And Kevin Streelman played pretty well down the stretch.
Yeah.
I actually thought he was going to win for a minute there.
There were a couple times early when they're showing Streelman. He just looked like an amateur out there. Like,
yeah, which guy's the amateur on this team?
Yeah, like you just, like the clothes.
He's got a pretty good career.
Oh, absolutely.
No,
I didn't
just
mean
his general, just the general salesman look.
Appearance of it. I'm like, why are they showing the amateur here? And then it's like Streelman, minus 14. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, they forgot to do the slash with his partner.
Yeah.
The Streelman, they bold they make the partner bigger.
Well, his partner's Fitzgerald.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
There was some.
I was thinking he was with that Mac.
No, that was Glover.
Yeah,
right.
Mac the Sandbagger.
There were some stinky scores on Sunday, though, other than Jordan Spieth.
All kinds of dude wipes needed on that course.
Spieth was, I think he was dead last coming into the Sunday, was he not? Or like,
no, I don't know about 59th, I think.
And finished T8.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of people
back.
Going
Maybe
the other
he's
way.
Back.
A lot of people going the other way helps.
Wow. Casey was plus 9, DJ plus 6, Every plus 8. Fitzy plus 7 cost us.
Yep. Shout out to Golf Twitter. I can't recall who it is, so I apologize for not giving your credit. But saw a lot of people talking about backdoor top 10s like Spieth had.
I saw that too.
Yeah. And the argument of what's the difference between having a really good Sunday or being the first round leader on Thursday? You had a good round.
It's almost more impressive.
It's four rounds.
Who cares how you get there? So
there's a reason scorecards are just numbers and not pictures.
Yeah, I like that. Wow. Sage wisdom.
It's been known
he is pretty old. So
what a start to episode 100.
The only other thing I had about Phil was how he said they're just better athletes now. That's why they hit it farther.
Oh, yeah.
And meanwhile,
someone posted the two pictures of the two drivers.
The two drivers and the driving distance when Phil came on tour was
273 he was averaging?
Yeah, something
that's
like that.
Average,
and 295 or something like that now.
Yeah,
20 yards difference, but they're better athletes.
Well, I saw his was 273 and his now is 3 something.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I just thought the picture was the best.
Yeah.
Or even when EVR and whoever did a couple of weeks ago there, they did the driver test
mm-hmm.
and we talked about on the show. And they're hitting old school drivers and they're hitting them like 230.
Yep.
And then they give him the big dog and he's goes 340.
Was that Matty Wallace?
I think it might have been Matt Wallace, yeah.
We've gone like, what, 20 minutes here? And we haven't brought up the best part of this tournament every year, and that's Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
He's back again.
He was back in a big way.
Is there like a monitor up to the left that he's like watching
I'm
the golf?
I'm pretty sure it was just a bumblebee flying around. Like he was just looking over there, and yeah, it was something else.
That guy could have dropped dead at any moment.
We were trying to talk about if it was Saturday or Sunday because of the Oscars, and we thought it was Sunday, and sure enough, it was Sunday. But even him, just like his clothes, he's classic wearing those tan old guy khakis he was wearing like skate shoes.
Yeah, he's just an old guy. That reminded me of one more thing on Phil. He had the old man bandage on his hand.
On the back of his hand.
Like just the big old bandaid because he probably got a lot of blood work
done.
Giving
some blood, yep.
Yeah, some blood work. Maybe the breeze was too much. It was really drying out his skin. He was starting to bleed.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys that had to go into the booth, David Duval played this week. Obviously withdrew on Saturday or Friday just so he could
make some money. The booth on the weekend?
Probably. But he actually shot 84-69 and still withdrew.
Hmm.
But his 69 was through 14 holes.
So. I like what you did there. But still, that guy is one of the best jobs in golf. He can play probably whenever he wants to, really. And then just if it's not going, he's like, meh, I guess I'll go in the booth now.
Yeah, make like, 1,200 or whatever he makes for that.
Like for some guys, withdrawing is in the interest of their health because they have to play for money again next week. But for him, absolutely not. He's got enough money. He's got enough of everything. It's just like
probably he's playing. I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame yet, but he's probably a Hall of Famer.
Oh, he's a Hall of Famer, I think.
And he's only 48 years old. So he's still got
two more years of mailing in two rounds.
I mean, he's probably got bandages on his hand now, but whatever.
Yeah. On his elbows.
Is that it, Harv? Or I got Canadians.
I just had a couple other ones we can get to in pick recap, but yeah, that's it.
Yeah, we had Gliggs, little bump, made the cut, T55, cashing a check this week.
You're welcome.
Unfortunately, Hadwin, Hughes, and Hearn all missed the cut. But I mean, when a Canadian wins a tournament, really, who the fuck cares about anyone else?
Really down.
Sorry.
Down plays the rest of the guys. Sorry.
Taylor started off his interview with a sorry, too, after, hey?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
What did he do?
Just said sorry. I don't know what.
Sorry for beating Phil. Definitely what it was for.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sorry, everyone, for beating Phil. I jacked him up.
Yeah. What do you have for shot of the week this week, Harv?
My shot of the week was, I'm going off the board here, Bill Murray.
Oh, yes.
The putt that was still
moving?
The putt
that was still moving. He just backhand tapped it in and just threw his putter and just walked up to the gallery to probably tell a joke or something.
Yeah. So I assume, I don't know where he finished. I assume he missed the cut because that's like, if they were in contention, that would have got called out, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm pretty sure they missed the cut.
Like, had to have.
He doesn't.
For him
I don't
just
think
do goofy
cares.
Shit like that. Oh, it's just Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, Bill finishes
third.
I don't think
he's, that guy might not even keep score in this. Like, you're just there. Yeah. If you get paired with him, it's just for like entertainment.
Yeah, he's probably there for comic relief.
Yeah,
for
I would think that's like his thing.
Yeah. My shot of the week was Nick Taylor's bunker hole out on 6, I think, for Eagle.
Mm.
Yeah.
And could
the other chip in was also great, but
arguably could be the other chip in for sure.
Oh, and then I had some of Phil honorable mentions, some of Phil's chip ins. Like he had quite a few out of the sand, and
yes, that one long one.
Yeah.
And the other one honorable mention was Hao Tung Lee, that near ace on the par 4.
The one that was
screaming
and
then hit the pin. But it was captioned near ace. I mean,
it might as well have hit the pin in the air.
one of the
might as well just whistled by. Like,
I'm most excited about having a Drive the Green Twitter account now. So that I don't have to tweet everything on my own. So because I like toe the line, I want to post some like my own personal views, but worried about people following it for the account and being like, I don't care about the Chiefs. That's one. But part two is so that we can post things like that that are completely stupid that people love. Like near ace, that is nowhere near an ace, or the best shot ever, or like some other hockey-related Twitter accounts that are like, best goal ever, and it's like just a generic goal.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to do that.
Kevin
Hayes. Look for that.
Sonk.
Any birthdays or aces this week? I don't think there was an ace.
Yep.
Oh.
Victor Hovland.
Oh.
Hole 14.
Hovland had his first career ace, I believe.
At Pebble Beach. And birthday. Big one. Lumpy.
Yep.
Lumpy.
50.
50.
Right.
Lumpy will be on the Champions Tour.
Yep.
We should get him on the pod.
Oh, he's coming on.
That'd be great.
I'm not, but after, I mean, I'm kind of feeling a little bit hot after saying GD was coming on and then he is on. So I don't really want to make too many promises, but Lumpy's going to be on.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. That wrap it up for Pebble?
Yep.
I mean, you could do dude wipes, but there is probably too many.
There's too many dude wipes. I don't have enough dude wipes to clean up all the messes that were made on Sunday.
Ryan Brown was 15 over on Sunday. That's said.
There it is.
Ryan Brown. Fitzy, we took Fitzy in one and done, and he shot 7 over on Sunday, so that didn't help the boys.
Oh, boy.
No. So, all right, it's time. Graham Dillette is on the 100th episode of the Drive the Green podcast. Once again, let's go back to the other promo code. This interview is brought to you by Player Golf, PLYRGolf.com. Use the promo code DriveTheGreen for 30% off, or DTG100 for 30% off and sleeper balls.
Yep.
Here's Graham Dillette, and we'll be back after to recap the news and get into our picks. Enjoy. Matty B, Drive the Green here. Today on the show, I'm with Bronell and Harv. Today on the show, we've been waiting to say this for a very, very long time. It is episode 100. Today on the show, we have the pride of Weyburn, Saskatchewan, fellow Sasky boy, Graham Dillette. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on, fellas. Did you have Wayner for 99 or what?
No. We actually
didn't
had
listen?
Like,
he was busy at Pebble Beach.
Yeah. We actually had Gligs. Michael Gligic was number 99 for us. So.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, good so guy. Yeah, Wayner and DJ, I think, actually did pretty well at the Pebble Beach this week, but didn't pull a victory in. But so, obviously, bucket list guy for the show. Where hopefully the nerves don't get the best of us here, but little growing up in Sask here, obviously the face of the province and Canadian golf for a little while there. We really just wanted to start off the chat by talking about growing up in Sask and making it, and how you were able to parlay, you know, a short golf season up here into a career.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly get asked that a lot, but it's like, I think the problem nowadays is kids are so one-dimensional. It's one sport. And I grew up, and, you know, I played golf every summer, every single day. But it was like 6 months, and right as golf season was ending, hockey season was always starting up, and I'd get fired up, and I'd put the clubs away, and I'd get the skates out, and that was... I look forward to the snow falling and getting back in the rink. And then just as soon as the snow started to melt, hockey season was winding down, I was getting excited to get back on the golf course. So it was kind of like a perfect, you know, scenario for myself. And, you know, I also played, you know, other sports, volleyball. I played pretty competitively. And I guess those are kind of my three sports growing up. But, I think that I always was super excited to get back out to the golf course every spring. And, you know, like I had a couple good buddies in Weyburn that we played golf every single day, 36, sometimes 54. We weren't really practicers at all. We would just go out and play, and everyone rode carts. So we'd just jump in my dad's cart or my buddy's uncle's cart or his dad's cart and just rip around and see how many holes we could basically get in a day. And, you know, parents pick me up after they were done work, sometimes play 9 at the old man or whatever. And head back home, and I mean it was pretty much like clockwork as a kid. And when it all came down, I always wanted to be a hockey player, just pretty much like anyone else.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. But I wasn't as good at it, first of all, and then I actually hurt my back for the first time pretty bad when I was 18 playing hockey. I kind of just got pushed out, not really cross-checked, but a D-man just kind of put his, you know, stick on my lower back and kind of pushed me out of the crease. And it just kind of like went out on me. And, you know, for a month, basically my dad was putting on my socks for me. Jeez. And he's like, you know, you've always been a pretty good golfer. Like, why don't we try to look for a scholarship? Like, this is right after I finished high school. And I was like, yeah, okay. So we started writing to a bunch of schools. And, you know, we had a little bit of interest. I wasn't really much of a student. Like, I just didn't, you know, put my heart into it like I did golf and hockey and everything. So my grades weren't super impressive, but I was able to get into some state schools and stuff like that. And You know, Boise State was obviously where I landed, and
right.
I'm just so glad that it all worked out as it did. I mean, I fell in love with the city, met my wife here, and I still live here. So, you know, it worked out really well. And I see so many kids chasing the big schools or, you know, the big-time programs, or they want to play in the warm weather, which I totally get. But this worked out so well for me here because I was able to step in as a true freshman right out of the gates and never missed a tournament my whole career. And, you know, you really learn how to play golf when you're playing in tournaments. And if right. you're, you know, if you go to a big school and you redshirt your first year and then, you know, your actual freshman year, then after your redshirt, then you're kind of maybe just skirting the traveling team once in a while. And then you just stop believing in yourself. And I've seen so many great players who come back after a year or two at a big school and they've lost their confidence and lost their golf game. And for me, it was the opposite because I was kind of almost like a little bit of a big fish in a small pond after I kind of got going here. And it just, my confidence was soaring. And I felt like every tournament that I played in, I was, had a good chance of winning. And, I never really, when I came here, I was just hoping to get a free education more than anything.
Right. Yeah.
And, after my freshman year, that's when I thought I was going to come down here and just get speed bagged by all the American golfers. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And, I had some success my freshman year, and that was when I was like, man, maybe I could actually get a shot living, and then, you know, the rest is kind of history.
Yeah. And I mean, Boise keeps you somewhat with Canadian weather. I mean, you get snow there and it's not quite, but you don't get probably minus 35 Celsius. So it's a little bit of best of both worlds.
I don't miss that, man. Actually, I come home. We always come home once, usually in December, like if it's not at Christmas, a couple weeks before to visit family, even though we call it kind of a Christmas vacation or whatever. But
right.
Occasionally we'll get that minus 30, minus 45. And it's honestly kind of fun for like the first
like a
day or two.
Yeah.
And after day six, it's like, oh, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah.
And the nice thing actually about Boise, like when I'm here in the winter, is if it is cold, it's kind of just a forced day off. And sometimes you just need that time. Like, I've spent the winters in Scottsdale since I turned pro in 06.
Right.
And it's perfect every day. So you just, if you're a little hungover and you're sitting on the couch and you feel guilty not being out, so then you go out and you just kind of fake it, and it's not really, you know, genuine practice. So
yeah.
It's kind of nice to have 4 days off and you can kind of go out and let it go with the boys.
Yeah, find a club guy and take, you know, a couple grand off him or something like that and head back to the couch. you had mentioned you and the boys heading out and going at twilight, you know, trying to get as many holes as you can. Do you know what your record is for holes in a day?
I don't remember. We played a 54 a lot. I know that we probably would have gotten more in a couple times, but we played 36 almost every day. Me and a buddy, Jeff Sabo, and then Blair Verber, we played pretty much every single day together. And I don't know the actual number, but we played a lot. And we're kind of like, the people would see us coming.
Yeah,
like
get out of the way.
You know, you're playing at like 10 a.m. or whatever. So most of the people that are out on the course are, you know, retired or whatever, and they kind of see you coming. They know the program. They just kind of move out of the way, and we're hitting and we're running and we're out of their way before they even know what's going on. So it was fun, man.
Yeah,
I look back here, I think back to those days or whatever, and I hope that my kids enjoy anything as much as I loved playing golf when I was that age.
Yep. What was your home course?
Weyburn Golf Club. That was our only only option. They built the back nine. I was probably about 12 or so. I'm just kind of guessing. So that would have been kind of early mid 90s.
Yep.
That was the only course. And then main prize was a course kind of just south of town, halfway to Estevan, that got built when I was kind of like a teenager. It was probably like mid 90s. So we used to buzz down there because my buddy Sabes, he was like 3 or 4 years older than me. So he had the car and we could rip down there with him.
Nice.
But they were all gravel roads. I remember my parents were always so nervous about jumping in a car with a 16-year-old on gravel roads and a little Ford Tempo or whatever he had, just ripping through the country. But
yeah, well, and that's kind of why I asked. Obviously, I knew Weyburn would have a little piece, obviously a big piece of your heart, but Main Prize and even Estevan have some good tracks, so it's a chance. There's so many hidden gems in this province, which we'll get to a little bit later. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunity here. How did you find, you know, that transition to college golf, and then just from there transitioning that into pro?
Yeah, well, like I said, I thought I was going to come down here and just fall through the cracks. Like, I really didn't know what to expect. And like, I remember the first couple practices at Boise State, and I was kind of looking through the roster. I remember, you know, I kind of hit it off with this one guy who was a year older than me, kind of right when I got there. And so he was kind of always my ride to the course and everything. And so the first couple of days, he was like, oh, yeah, you know, we got this one guy, Luke. He's our number one guy. He's awesome. And then all the other guys, and we just, like, I met him at the course, and we were hitting balls. And I remember just not being wowed by them, thinking, you know, this is, I think, something that I can do. And so right before school starts, which is kind of late or early September, so it's Labor Day, there's like this amateur tournament in the valley here that we used to use as qualifying, so all the guys would play, and I was a little guy on our team at the qualifying, and that was when I was like, okay, I can actually play with these guys. And the rest kind of took off, and that's when I really started practicing too. Like, I never, like I said, I played every day because I loved playing golf, but once I got to college, that's when I started actually practicing, and then that's when my game kind of just went to, it just slowly kind of started going to another level. It kind of just felt like every year. And, you know, a lot of it was confidence, but a lot of it was just practicing and being out on the golf course and hitting shots. And it's kind of fun, too, when you're on a team, because you play games on the range. You can hit shots, play horse, or whatever it is. And, you know, sometimes it can get boring just being out there banging balls and hitting just driving range 7-iron. After 7-iron, so.
Guilty.
And even to this day, like, even if I'm practicing by myself, like, that's what I do. Like, I like to hit shots, and, you know, if I have a 7-iron, it's low draw, high cut, high draw, low cut, whatever it is, and just always kind of moving it around and pretending there's trees in the way and hitting shots around trees and that kind of thing. And, you know, that was always the strength of my game. Even at the PGA Tour level, that I could kind of set myself apart from other guys who I wouldn't say that just only had one shot, but had one shot that they're always really comfortable hitting. And for the most part, I always had a few. So, awesome.
What's this low cut shot you speak of? Yeah. I have no idea.
It's usually really thin off the needle, and just they don't always move
left and right. Yeah, well, we cut out a little bit there, but
that leads me to the first thing that came to my mind, like yesterday at Pebble Beach, the wind there was a big factor, and it was basically mind-boggling. Those guys, do you think growing up in southern Saskatchewan and playing in that wind every day like set you up better when the wind got bad on the PGA Tour, if it ever did when you were playing?
100%, man. And it's like, no one likes to play in the wind.
doesn't matter. Get used to it.
We would all rather play in Palm Springs where it's perfect every single day. However, on days when it's pumping, I always knew that I had an advantage. And then especially, you know, you're a product of your environment for sure. And not only the wind in southern Saskatchewan, but at Weyburn Golf Club, like, our greens on the old nine were tiny, tiny little turtleback greens. So it just took precision golf shots, like, to hit the green in pumping wind, you know, like, no matter what, like, even from 150 yards out, like, you would have to hit the shot just to get it on the green sometimes.
Right.
And it's like, you, as a father for my son, I would love to have him be able, if he wanted to play golf, to have an unbelievable facility to practice at and great greens and everything like that. But I feel like that's what made me who I am as a player, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's kind of hard sometimes to actually say, maybe you'd be better off playing it in Muni and gotten it out with slow rounds and whatever, like, imperfect conditions, and, you know, learn how to be a scrappy player instead of, you know, your poster boy kind of, I don't know, silver spoon country club kid, you know?
Yeah, well, shit, I mean, that's mental training, just trying to make your way through a six-hour round at, what is it, Saskatoon Golf and Country Club or wherever.
Holiday
yeah.
Park.
Holiday 50, Park, yeah. Holiday 50 Park. 50K
win. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. So we just want to transition, obviously, your time on PGA Tour. You know, you're the face of Canadian golf for quite a while here, and one of the big things we've noticed, obviously, Canadian Golf Podcast, we've had a lot of Canadians on the show. Been lucky to have them join us. Coming off a huge win by Nick Taylor at Pebble Beach this week. Just your thoughts on the state of the Canadians on PGA Tour and just golf in general, and how, you know, it seems guys genuinely care for each other a little bit more with this, you know, the Canadian hype, Canadian hype train, really.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that all the Canadian guys, even if because a lot of them now are so much younger than I am. Like, I'm kind of one of the old guys that left out there or whatever, but you just always have a connection no matter what. And we all cheer for each other. There's no question, and we're all competing against each other at the same time. But when you know, someone is playing well, we're always, you know, sending texts or whatever. I always wait until after the tournament to send texts because, I don't know. That's just how I am. But Nick's performance this past week was unbelievable. I was so happy for him. He's a good buddy of mine, and I couldn't be more proud of him, honest to God. And it was like, I remember when Mike won the Masters and when Amesy won the Players. Those are like such monumental wins.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And drivers in my career. And I know that what Nick did yesterday, because all the young kids coming up, they know that Mike and Steven won big tournaments, but they didn't watch them. They watched Nick win at Pebble, and especially of all places, like, it was amazing. And that's going to be a driver to keep the game going. And it's amazing. Obviously, Adam's playing well. Corey Connors had a spectacular year there last year, and the game's in good hands in Canada, and I think that it's just going to continuously get better and better.
And it doesn't hurt that it was toe to toe with Phil at Pebble Beach, and he conquered him. Hey,
that was the best part.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Was the best part.
Yeah. Phil's course too.
He didn't. Yeah. It was a roller coaster there for a little bit, and it's like, oh no, it's Phil at Pebble, and he's coming on, and then Nick jarred that chip in on, what was it, 15? I think.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, lights out, suck it, Phil. And
when we had,
it was so, then Nick was just so unrattled. It was it was unbelievable watching his composure in the whole thing. And when Nick chipped in, I was so pumped there on 15. And as soon as he just gave like a nice, like subtle but strong fist pump, and I was just like thinking at the time, I'm like, that is how you fist pump. I hope Phil saw that, because man, that's the only thing. Like, the guy's he might end up being the top 10 player maybe of all time, but his fist pumps are horrible.
Bottom five fist pumps. Yeah. Yeah,
I thought Phil was maybe
five. Yeah.
I thought Phil was maybe standing just off the with a fan trying to rattle Nick when his hat blew off there. It's like, just give like a little extra, like hiring people to flip his hat off and all this stuff. Now, obviously, talking about those highlights, we want to talk obviously a little bit about your career. I mean, multiple Mackenzie Tour wins, high finishes on the PGA Tour. I mean, the PGA Championship, played in the Olympics, played in the President's Cup, all of these things, $11+ million earned on the PGA Tour. Like, you got a resume, sir. And so we just wanted to get your take on your career so far and what you believe is your career highlight.
I think that my career highlight would be the Olympics, just even though I didn't play great when I was down there, just being there was such a special thing, and just being part of, we walked the opening ceremonies, David and I, and the thing that I'll always remember about that experience was how much it meant to all the other athletes. Not that it didn't mean anything to me, because it did. I was super, super proud to be there, but if I didn't play well that week, I was going to Greensboro for a $7.5 million person next week. It wasn't the end of the world, you know what I mean? But all these people, like the wrestlers,
the Apex,
and the lacrosse players and field hockey. I got to know some of the field hockey guys or whatever. We played ping pong and stuff quite a bit. And they make nothing. They get government funding. There's like three of them in like low budget housing. They got to work side jobs just to make ends meet, work their butt bag off for 4 years, and then they finally get there, and now what? The guy's like, he was 28. This one kid from Calgary is like, I'm like, you need to play again when you're 32? He's like, dude, it's like, I'm 28. Like, fuck, I gotta have a life. Like, at some point, I gotta give up on this thing. It's awesome playing the Olympics. But when you walk through the opening ceremonies and the tears that are pouring out of people's eyes and the emotions that are coming out because they've worked so hard for 4 years to get to that pinnacle, that was by far the best part of the Olympics.
I imagine
the President's Cup. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead. I was just going to chime in with a little. I'm sure the Athletes Village was something to behold as well.
It was pretty cool. Yeah, it was kind of funny, though, because there was, like, our condo or apartment or whatever that we were staying in, like, it was unfinished. So, like, you go into the bathroom, and there's, like, where there's supposed to be a light, there was, like, a red and a black wire sticking out of the wall, and they weren't taped or anything.
that was
going on here.
The Olympics, where all the journalists are coming in, there's like a shower head for a door handle and all that stuff.
Yeah, but it kind of made it too, though. You know what I mean? Like it was an experience. Tokyo will be unbelievable. I know, as long as this coronavirus doesn't, I don't know what's going to happen there, but I could only imagine how amazing that will be put on, because I've been to Japan once and other like Asian countries, and they really, really care about what people think when they leave, you know, type of thing.
For sure. Yeah, they do.
So they're going to put on an amazing show, I'm sure.
Yep. And then you said the other one you were
getting. Anyways, getting back to the original question, the President's Cup was an amazing experience, even though, you know, like just personally as a team, you know, it didn't go so well, but some of my best memories in golf come from that, and it, just being part of that team was amazing, and just the guys and the laughs and you know, playing for each other. Like, you just get so used to playing for yourself that you kind of forget that even though I grew up playing team sports and everything, you kind of forget how it feels a little bit, because you just play an individual sport forever. So that was really fun to you know, play for 11 other guys, and even though we didn't have our best stuff there that week, that was fun. And you know, as far as my whole career, you know, if it ended today, I'd obviously be super proud of what everything that I've done. You know, obviously the glaring thing missing is a win. I know that I was always a good enough player, and I'm a good enough player now to get it, and it just never happened, and for whatever reason. But you know, that's one thing that's really still driving me, going through injuries and rehab and training and everything to get back out there.
Yeah.
To get that win, man, because that's just what I need to just kind of feel really content about my career. And then I really want to play long enough so that I have 4-year-old twins, so that they can kind of enjoy or know, you know, what I did type of thing. Like, they've come out to some tournaments, they kind of get it. They know that, like I was telling them, that Nick's a good buddy of mine. We were watching the golf yesterday. I don't know if they really understood quite yet, so it would be nice to, you know, you see guys take their kids through the locker room, and to have my son Roscoe give, you know, pound to Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler and that kind of stuff. Like, that's cool experiences that no kid ever gets to experience, you know? So.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what, I mean, we have 6 kids on this podcast that we know exactly what it feels like to be a father, and to have that, and your kids look at that, and then we go to, you know, the Canadian Open, and we get to fist bump you guys, you pros, and it's like, I feel like I'm a 5-year-old kid, so I can only imagine.
You're the guy yelling in the crowd, I love you, Ricky, and he's like a 45-year-old man. You're like, what's wrong with this guy?
That's him.
One year in L.A., and that's when he used to wear the all orange, and it was like, you know, it was pretty new. It was probably like 2012 or 10 or something like that, somewhere in there. And we're like walking down number 2, and this guy, I'm serious, man, he's like 45 years old, he's dressed in all orange, he's like, I love you, Ricky, and we're like 2 feet away.
Just an inspiration to him.
Was he wearing golf shoes too?
Like, oh yeah, they're always wearing golf shoes, but it's like, I couldn't imagine, like, you're a 45-year-old man and you're screaming that you love a 22-year-old kid, like, you dress like him. Like, what's wrong with you?
I didn't go that far. Where in when you got media credentials at a tournament, you can't just walk up to a guy on the range and start shaking his hand and be like, "Oh man, I love you so much."
Circling back, you said you really enjoyed the team aspect of it. Do you think that kind of new tour that they're discussing, with the fact that they are going to do it team-wise, is that going to appeal to a lot of players, or is that just going to just kind of fall apart?
I don't know exactly what's going to happen with this whole thing, but I know that, I feel very, very strongly, I shouldn't say I know because I don't really know anything that's going on, but the PGA Tour will do anything to squash this thing.
Yeah.
There's no question. And so when it comes down, the only thing that's going to draw players away is money.
Yeah.
If they start offering $20 million purses and we're playing for nine, guys are going. There's no question. But if they're comparable, because I think like the main thing that they're struggling with on that tour right now is that, or the this proposed tour, there's no world ranking points. So then all of a sudden these guys, you're not playing in majors and
right.
the players and that kind of thing. And that's a massive deterrent. But when it comes down to it, as sad as it is, it's going to be about money.
Yep.
Yep, but that's fair.
I think that the tour, it's not like they didn't know that this has been coming for a while. Like there's been rumors and whispers and that kind of stuff. And I mean, look at the money that we're playing for on the PGA Tour right now. It's a joke, like compared to 2010 when I first came out. Like, I mean, it's amazing. I remember my first good finish. I finished third in Houston 2010, and it was like a $5.8 million purse or something, and I was pumped about it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it wasn't even like a small purse. Like, this is a good week to have a good finish type of thing. And now, I mean, 5.8 is hardly even worth playing. Like, that's a week off.
For sure.
It's crazy.
All right. Before we get into it, we got some rapid fire here to end off, but we're going to get into some of your off the course stuff. You are a beer connoisseur now with Prairie Bard. How did that come about? How'd you get into it? I mean, it's great stuff. Just tell us about how that happened.
Well, I think more than anything, it was just kind of a side thing. And, you hear of guys who retire or they're forced out of the game or whatever it may be before that they're ready to be done and they have nothing to do. You're so used to being on the golf course for 7 hours a day and all of a sudden you have 7 hours you need to make up time and you're like, what are they going to do? So guys, like, I wouldn't say maybe they go into depression, but they're bored.
Yeah.
More than anything. And
yep.
I was like, I need something for when I'm done and I start this while I'm at least somewhat relevant in the game still. So, a lot of guys at that time, especially, would do wine, but who's going to buy wine from a kid from Waving Scott? I'm like, what does anyone there know about wine? So I figured everyone drinks beer. So maybe that's kind of the next. And I've always been a beer guy. So, that's kind of how it all happened really. And, I found a good partner out in Vancouver, and we're actually doing it now down in Boise, and it's been fun. It's not something obviously that's replacing the income from the PGA Tour, but it's kind of a hobby, and it's kind of fun to watch it slowly grow. And hopefully, we can. I'd like to eventually kind of take it in and have a couple different, maybe even at least like a seasonal.
Nice.
And try to grow it a little bit, but as of right now, it's just trying to get more of a footprint for the brand. And once we get that, then we can kind of hopefully try to expand.
Awesome. You had mentioned that you come back to Canada, obviously in the wintertime, come back in the summer to put on a tournament. Do you fly yourself when you come back?
No, I don't. But it's something actually I was planning on doing this summer, as I wanted to get in the plane and fly up. And then once I started kind of feeling better and, my focus was just really on getting back to the PGA Tour and playing golf again. So
for sure, yeah.
I just jump on commercial flight and come on up. But, it's fun, man. That's just a total side pass. And it's kind of like a weird thing. When I first got hurt in 2017, well, right after the PGA, basically, November, October 2017 kind of thing, I kind of just needed something to do. So I felt like I was just, like, I would go to rehab in the morning.
Right.
And I basically sit around and do nothing all day. And I'm like, man, I got to do something. And I remember it was earlier that summer, because there's a kid named Morgan Hoffman. He flies, and he has his own plane and everything, flies week to week. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm like, I've always kind of wanted to fly, to become a pilot or whatever. And he's like, well, you should just fucking do it then.
Like, okay. Good advice, yeah.
I was like, yeah, you're right. What's stopping me? Like, so anyways, I was like, maybe I should just do that. And so that's when I called a guy in Scottsdale and learned how to fly there. And shortly after that, I got my own plane and been flying quite a bit. I love it. I really, really, really enjoy it. Taking the boys on some golf trips, just kind of, you know, around Eastern Oregon and Idaho, and flying up to the lake, and just cool stuff. It just opens so many fun doors to do neat stuff. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Doesn't hurt that you own a plane. It makes it a little bit easier to do these things.
Trust me, those things are not cheap.
Yeah, but they probably got lots of carrying value. I'm sure you could sell it for exactly what
resale
you bought it for.
Resale value.
Yeah, resale value.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're learning to become a pilot, is there like a portion of the textbook or whatever that you're learning where you have to learn to talk in that voice that all pilots talk in, or is that just a trick of the trade you pick up?
Scottsdale Tower, Saratoga 269 Zulu. Yeah, like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's what
pilot
we're looking
talk.
For.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, and actually, that's one of the hardest things about becoming a pilot and getting your license, really, is the work on the mic. And I tell people this all the time. If I would have known how much I had to study and how much knowledge that I needed, I probably wouldn't have done it. Like, we can rewind to the start first 2 minutes of the show when I said I didn't really like schoolwork that much.
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of book work for it, but I also really enjoyed doing it. So it wasn't, it didn't really feel like work. I was just kind of learning, and yeah, it was fun, super fun. And the next step is to get my instrument rating so you can kind of fly in weather. Like right now, I can only fly on nice days.
Right.
So. You're a better pilot when you're instrument ready. Even if you're flying on a nice day, you just have more knowledge and kind of in the kitty. So
yeah,
it's a smart move, and it's something I was actually planning on doing this summer. And like I said, then I started feeling better. I'm like, well, my focus needs to be to get back on tour and try to finish off this career. Like to get, you know, 3, 4, 5 more years in if I can.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you, like, halfway through that textbook go up to Hoffman and be like, what the fuck, man? You never told me this is going to be this hard.
he was kind of my support group as I was going through it. So I was like, holy shit, I had no idea how much you have to know. He's like, well, it's probably a good thing that you learn it, because you can't fake your way.
Yeah, exactly.
Cheat off someone else like I might maybe did in school. Like, you can't, there's no cheating when you're up there.
No.
So, yeah, no one else's arm to read off of.
Yeah. As a drone pilot, I can attest to all of that.
I wonder what kids do now. There's probably some really unique and, like, easy ways, or like high tech ways to cheat in school now that I don't know about, but
for sure
I should probably learn before my kids get to high school.
Yeah. It could actually be though the opposite. It could be the hiding in plain sight, just like the pencil on the inside of the calculator case. That was the go-to.
Yeah.
Plain sight. Good one.
Oh, nice. You see what I did there?
Yeah. One more question before we get to rapid fire. We ask this to every guest. Ultimate foursome, you probably get asked it a lot, but any three people that you'd want to play a round of golf with, and where?
If I had to play anywhere, it honestly might be Pebble. That's just one of the most special places on earth. I just love being out there in Monterey. And because it hasn't happened yet, I would say my wife and my son and my daughter, just because, you know, that I just haven't, we haven't all gotten out and played golf. We hit balls on the range or whatever, but they're not quite old enough to get out and play golf yet. So that would be my dream foursome right now. And then, once I see my kids acting like I probably did when I was 7 years old on the golf course, they probably switch. So I'll let you know then.
Thanks.
Great answer.
All right, we'll get into rapid fire. Now, This is episode 100, so for the next 100, I think we're going to introduce, as part of Rapid Fire, we're calling it Obscure Alley. So it is going to be in the middle of these golf-related Rapid Fires. You're gonna find some little tidbits or some little special questions. So feel free to answer those ones as well. But first question.
There's not 100 of them, though.
No, no, no.
150, no. But.
like eight. There's like eight. Being from Saskatchewan, what is your ideal, let's say, four-stop Saskatchewan road trip for golf courses?
Golf courses.
Yeah.
I would go back to Weyburn for sure because that's where I learned to play. Riverside. Man, this is tough on the spot. Dakota Dunes. And I always enjoyed playing in Wascana when I was a kid too.
Okay, so now that you named three of the more well known, what would you add as a hidden gem on that tour?
Geez, rapid fire, Graham, figure it out. I always enjoy playing Saskatoon Golf Country Club too with my boys. When I'm in Saskatoon, I play there quite a bit. So I'll just say that one.
All right, cool.
How many career aces do you have?
Four.
Nice. Were any on tour?
None. Never made one in competition at any level.
All right.
Have you smoked a cigarette before?
Yes.
what is your favorite tour stop?
Can I give you like three?
Yeah.
Or is it one?
No, it's three.
Riviera, Colonial, Muirfield. Players, four of them.
Okay.
If I had to pick one, it'd be the Players.
Solid. Favorite Calgary Flame ever?
Lanny McDonald.
Oh, nice.
Darren Fleury. I don't know. Shit.
I thought it might have been Ginla.
I'm wearing a mustache right now, a pretty decent mustache, so... And I don't know. Maybe that's why I was thinking Lanny, but
yeah, you're looking in a mirror while you're doing this.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you use shampoo then conditioner, or do you use them both at the same time?
Shampoo then.
All right.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen on a golf course?
Now this is a good one. You can be long-winded here, and you don't have to use names. So we can.
Okay. Actually, this is a bit of a story, but we were playing.
Yeah, this is like the extended rapid fire question that we always get. So feel free to go in detail.
TPC Potomac, there's this goofy. It's in Washington D.C. There's this goofy hole. it's kind of like this. It's like there's like a hazard that is pretty wide that goes kind of from the tee all the way to the green, and it sort of goes on an angle, and you kind of have to play to this right fairway and hit over it. Anyways, this guy that I was playing with hit it left into the hazard, and he was having a bad day, and he pulled out his ball, and his caddy's like, whoa, it's like, what if we find your ball? Like, it was like ankle to knee deep in grass. He probably wasn't going to find it. He's like, dude, we're not finding that. He's like, let me go run up. So his caddy runs all the way up there, finds it. He's like, hey. So this kid grabs like three clubs out of his bag and starts walking. And so the other thing about, so you have to go all the way to the green on this par four across this bridge, and then you have to run back like another 200 yards. So he just ran like 600 yards total, 400 and 200. So now he's caddying for, instead of picking up the bag like any decent human being would do, he grabs like two clubs out of there and starts walking.
No.
His bag is sitting on the tee box, and we didn't even really realize because we had kind of like walked up and we were kind of at the ladies' tee box, because we thought he was just going to, just hit another one or whatever.
Yep.
Whatever. So we're ahead. Or else my caddy would have just grabbed the bag for him, too, and just double-bagged it.
Yeah.
So by the time we notice that, we're kind of halfway up the fairway. We look back, and he's walking behind us with, like, two clubs, and his bag's on the green, or on the tee box. So now his caddy runs all the way up to the green again, crosses the bridge, runs right by his player and gives him an evil look, like, and yeah, like, are you fucking kidding me, dude? Like, runs all the way back to the tee, grabs a bag. By this time now, he's in this long rough. He's got the wrong club. Seven iron or whatever. So now, he's got to walk all the way up to the green again now with the bag on his shoulder, come all the way back. And anyways,
Did he quit?
I mean, he ran like, what's that?
Did he quit right after that?
No, but the next hole now is this par three, and it's straight up the hill. And I was like walking up, and I was like, holy fuck, this is a big hill. He goes, it's a really big hill when you've just ran fucking 1,500 yards in the last hole. And like, we all kind of started laughing or whatever. So then I was telling guys about this when I was like, you know, having lunch or whatever after the round. I'm like, you wouldn't believe what so-and-so did to his caddy or whatever. And I'm like, I can't fucking believe this kid. Like, so then like two tournaments later, he comes up to me on the green. He's like, hey, man. He's like, I would have carried the bag. I had no idea. He's like, I thought it was going to be a penalty if I carried the bag. And that's why he's like, so if you think that I'm a dick, you're probably right. But I wasn't like trying to be a dick, like doing that or whatever. But that was like, I remember like watching this. I'm like, I can't believe this is the biggest dick move that I've ever seen a player treat his caddy. Like, there's a lot of guys that don't treat their caddies well, but that was one of the worst.
Yeah, that's crazy. What was your first car?
Ford Tempo.
Nice. Oh, that, yeah, I mentioned it already. Yeah,
I've won one of those. Yep.
What's your favorite?
Ford Tempo.
Oh,
sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Finish that thought.
Oh, I was going to say, and then I had a Plymouth Sundance.
Oh, baby.
And then I had a Jeep Liberty. And then.
Oh, me too.
When I turned pro, when I finally got some money, then I bought a Nissan GTR. That was like my little treat. And I recently sold that, and that was not a good investment, but it was a fun car.
Now, what is it? Dodge Caravan or?
It's a Sienna.
Oh, Caravan's cousin.
But I drive Toyota Tundra most of the time around town. That's kind of, I actually enjoyed driving my truck more than my sports car anyway. So.
Yep, Sasky boy, yep.
No, for sure. What's your favorite side game or gambling game to play on the course?
Banker.
Nice.
Okay. Yep.
Nothing wrong with that.
I like it.
For how much?
you can lose over $1,000 sometimes playing in the game. Like, we play it with the boys here at the course that I'm a member on Boise is called Spurwing. A bad day, I lose over $1,000, but a good day in the $1,500 type of thing. Nice. I don't know who you're playing with.
Yep, for sure. So fellow Sask boy, Kelly Taylor, I think you and him are buddies and tend to exchange some jabs on Twitter. Is we've kind of pegged him to be on the pod. Is that a guy that we should have on this show?
Oh yeah, 100%. That should have been your century pod right there.
Well, we thought about doing a conference call with you, but we didn't. But you're our guy, so we had to go with you first. So maybe he'll get the 101 Dalmatians.
No, he's the best, man. He's the best. He's done our charity event the last 3 years. Last year we did it down in Boise. He came down here and everyone. He's always done like the PG show in Saskatchewan because it was always like it. We had like kids from the children's hospital or whatever come in, and yeah. So he's keeping it kind of PG. And this year I told him like, man, let it go. Like, don't hold anything back. He's like, are you sure? I was like, okay, give me the in between then. And he gave me the in between, and I was like, oh boy. I was like looking around the room, thinking that people are going to be, you know, being like, who is this guy? But everyone was just in tears. He's as funny as they come, man.
Good. Yeah, we might have to get, I don't know if there's such a thing as two explicit boxes for your pod for special apps, but we might have to get a second one.
Yeah, he's funny, man.
Oh, here's a good one for you. Why did you go Shaw and not Sastel? Did they not pony up enough for the sponsorship? Or?
Well, I think when it came down to it, there's going to be a lot of people probably pretty upset if a government-run company was throwing a bunch of money at a kid to play on tour. So
yeah.
It never really got into discussion, yeah.
Yeah, that little nugget. All right, last one. This is very important. Are you a Coke or a Pepsi guy?
I would say Coke, if anything, but I don't really drink both.
You're into the waters now.
That's a good answer.
Still counts as Coke.
Wine and beer mostly.
Wine and beer, yeah. Those are the old, if they don't have alcohol, they're not going in your body.
Healthier, heart smart.
Yeah.
Heart smart, for sure. Awesome.
Just not those seltzers, man. Just, you guys stay away from those things.
Yeah, I'm not getting into those.
There's an entire industry of beer guys out there that need people to get off these seltzers.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But when I saw Bud Light coming out with a seltzer, like, what are we doing?
I know.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
poo is going to drink that? Are you kidding?
Hey, three red-blooded Saskatchewan males aren't drinking seltz.
Yeah. No. Like, there's a small part of me that, like, wants to try one, but then if I try it and I like it, then I'll never live with myself, so I can't. I just can't try it. Yeah, so.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea.
Yep. All right, well, that's all we got for you, Graham. We really appreciate it. I mean, ringing in episode 100 in style, we thank you. We can't wait to see you back on tour again. And best of luck with rehab and everything that's going on. And we can't wait to see you out there.
Thanks, Grim.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thanks, fellas. You bet.
All right, take care. Big thanks to GD for joining the boys. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, it was.
I had a blast. Obviously, we missed on a few things, though. The chat was really good. Nice to hear from him. Nice to have him on the show, talk a little bit about Sask Golf, his road, a lot of F-bombs.
He set the fuck record.
Set the record.
I can't believe we didn't ask him about the Hillcrest, our home course. Yeah. He played it.
And why he didn't put it in his list. Oh, it wouldn't be in your top four courses. But we missed that. What else did we miss? I think I missed something too. Oh, Harv, you missed something about Boise State's blue turf.
Yeah, I was going to ask him if they dyed the courses blue too.
But. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm glad that you didn't ask that.
Sometimes you just get blinded by celebrity, and even us are not immune to that.
Yep.
So big thanks to Graham Dillette for that. Well, it's time now to get into the news then.
Yeah, is there anything interesting this week?
Well, nothing as interesting as all the stuff we've already done on the show, but let's see what we can find.
Yep.
We'll start off with a real feel-good one. Mm. Rory McIlroy, officially number one in the world again.
Mm. By default.
We knew it was coming.
It just feels like things are right again in the world now that he's
heading
back
into
on top.
The Genesis.
I
Riviera.
Think I saw that he's 1 week behind Nick Faldo for most weeks.
Weeks?
Being number one.
By a European.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah.
No, I mean that was just a quick mention.
Quick little excerpt.
A big tournament on the Euro Tour this week. The ISPS Handa Vic Open. That's where the LPGA and the Euro Tour play side by side.
I like this. This is a good idea.
Yeah. Jeff Ogilvy really likes it. He thinks it should happen more often.
See, I can get behind his idea here of showcasing them both at the same time in the same place.
You can, but it seems like you're leaving money on the table. Mm,
it is a little
for
bit
the
of
LPGA.
A split sponsorship.
Unless it depends on how they split the money to each tour. Because the LPGA events probably aren't getting in as many viewers or spectators.
Yep.
But it's more that they'd make more off their own tournament than this tournament. If they're splitting it 50-50.
Yeah, I'm wondering what how it would work. Yeah. Like, I'm just wondering the finances of it and how the splitting of the pots. And
I think one's good. I think the PGA, LPGA should maybe do one.
One, yeah.
Especially in, like, I don't think this is a huge tournament given after looking at the leaderboard for the Euro Tour, so maybe they do not a off week one, but
some sort of joint
a Greenbrier or a 3M or something like that. That's
I like it.
And the winners were Min Woo Lee won on the Euro Tour side.
Yeah, that sounds right.
His sister won this tournament 2 years ago, which I thought was kind of neat.
Okay.
And Hee Young Park won for the ladies.
There's a couple of he's.
Yeah. Well, no. Hee Young Park and Min Woo Lee.
Oh, sorry.
The trophy here wasn't
good
that
one.
Great.
Good one, bro. Now
it was. I wasn't just paying attention. The trophy here was just a tiny little metal cup for the men after last week's gigantic thing.
Yes. We didn't talk about the trophy at last week in the Euro tournament. Didn't talk about the trophy, and we also didn't touch on Nick Taylor's trophy for AT&T Pebble Beach.
I don't like it, but the fact that he has it, that's great.
Yep, exactly. Like, tall glass.
It's tall glass. It can still go on a mantle. Mm-hmm. It's not the worst glass one out there.
Right next to the Cock Trophy, one at Sanderson's Farms.
Yep. Absolutely.
That he said, what did he say? It was in a closet somewhere?
Yeah.
Then he said his closet, his parents' house. What did he say?
Yeah. Phil Mickelson was in the news a little bit. He said he won't take a special exemption to get into the U.S. Open. So if he doesn't qualify, he ain't playing.
It was actually, could have been one of the ballsiest things ever to say that and then go and win Pebble Beach and get into it.
He's still got time.
Big, yeah.
I mean, he's still got time, but it was like he was almost
I have imagine a sneaking the story suspicion, after if suspicion won. That he, if he's playing good going into it, he's going to take that special exemption. You can't not. He's absolutely. Only going to have so many more chances to try and get that.
It's absolutely what will happen.
And
if he's playing well,
he absolutely has 0% chance of winning the U.S. Open this year. So it doesn't matter if he's in it or not.
Well, you still got to, you still got it. If he's playing good, he has to take the exemption. Like,
yeah,
if everything clicks and he wins,
yeah,
he won't.
Well, no, he won't.
Don't make statements like that unless you're willing to go back on them, because he's going back on it. There's maybe. No way that he doesn't take it. If he goes in riding like three straight top tens or something like that and just doesn't happen to qualify, and then they're like, you can play in it if you want.
He's taking it.
He's taking it.
The other Phil thing was that new commercial that came out that he was in, the Amstel Light. Or
that's one of the best things Phil has ever done. If you haven't seen that commercial yet, find it on Twitter.
The social media stuff.
I don't think that was Amstel Light he was drinking. Like, that was just water in there.
Oh, for sure.
Like, he's clearly a Michelob Ultra Seltzers. Guy now.
Yeah.
No, he's a Michelob Ultra, like the low-calorie beer. Like, you don't drop 50 pounds drinking beers.
Imagine if, to tie this into a bow back to the Delette interview, if Phil was drinking seltzers, giving fist pumps, just Graham's hand might explode.
What else here? Oh, bit of a big thing. Bryson DeChambeau made the list of the 50 fittest athletes.
Do you think that's why he was doing it?
I don't think so.
Just to
it's a flawed list. Like there's 25 males and 25 females. Bryson was 24th.
He's the only the only golfer.
The only golfer though.
That is very flawed list. Like I think you put obviously you put Brooks there, Rory,
Tiger.
There's a lot more fit guys.
Rory's way more fit than. Bryson.
Rory's jacked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ripped, shredded.
Giannis was number one.
Yeah, that guy's got like 1% body fat.
But the guy who was fourth, this is where the flawed list comes in, has been voted the fittest man in the world 4 years in a row.
But yet not the fittest athlete.
Let himself go a little this year, maybe.
So you can only assume. It doesn't seem that way.
So I can only assume that the top three were women then.
No, it was 25 of each. So, like, it was a male list of 25 and a female list of 25. Yeah,
but he was the fittest man. The only possible way they couldn't be the fittest athlete is if the top three were women, but yet they weren't, so it's definitely flawed.
Yep.
Derrick Henry, 11th. I thought that was odd, too.
That's also very
That's odd. A fit man.
Very fit.
A big fit specimen, I mean, unit, whatever
you want. There's tons of NFL players that could be on that list.
Yes, but. There was quite a few. Patrick Mahomes was on the list.
Yes.
I don't know
Super
where.
Bowl champion, Antonio Patrick Brown? Mahomes. No.
Is he an NFL player?
No.
Name?
Right. He's apologizing, though.
He's fit, though.
He's doing his part to make a return to the Steelers, but we won't get into that.
Okay.
Tiger stats. I don't know why people do these and just cherry pick whatever the heck they want.
So why are you doing it, then?
Well, because
that's a good point.
It bothered me.
Oh.
That they did Tiger's first 100 starts. He had 28 wins. In Rory, DJ, Spieth, Fowler, and Day's first 100 starts combined, they had 27 wins.
That's so
like, why didn't you just pick another? Why didn't you just pick another bunch of guys who have zero wins?
yeah,
and make it like a list of 100 people.
Yeah,
like it.
That is so stupid.
That's a pretty dumb list.
And the last piece of news, probably the biggest one, the PGA and RNA came out with their distance study,
and
saying that the ball goes too far. I believe
this is hilarious.
It's stupid. It's dumb. Go on, say your points, and I'll come in later.
No, I don't have any. I can't remember my points. We talked about this earlier in the week. One of the perils of doing this pod once a week is we have really good arguments, and I forget them. Mm-hmm. I can't recall what my argument was.
So
you're going to have to give me my argument back, and then I can drink that stats.
When you're drinking 47 beers in a week, then...
Yeah, he makes a good point there.
It's a good point.
A little bit to do with it.
Things get a little hazy, so to speak.
And I mean, I'm partaking in other things that... cost me some memory, but whatever.
Oh, nose beers.
No.
Anyway.
Hard no there.
it's embrace the explicit.
Yeah. My thing is just pick different golf courses where there's trees or water lining the entire fairway.
Yep.
Like imagine something like Elk Ridge.
Yeah, so you just can't spray it everywhere.
Just so you can't just launch it wherever you want. You like, have to hit it in the fairway.
We talked about it earlier. Nick Taylor's somewhat of a snappy hook drive. that hit the crowd and stuff. Make that all tree line. He has no chance. It's going to be a penalty stroke.
Or grow the rough out and narrow the fairways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to grow to US Open lengths, but just make it longer and narrower.
I'm pretty sure I saw a stat saying there was four shorter par fours this week that all played really tough. So
yeah, like it was, but yeah, just, but yet he was still 20.
But Pebble Beach is a bit of a different animal.
For the whole field.
Oh, I got you.
Play
gotcha.
Tough for the whole field.
Yeah.
Pebble Beach is a bit of a different animal because those short ones are also, you can only hit it so far.
Yeah.
Yes. Otherwise, you're in the ocean.
A little bit of target golf. Yeah.
But I'm not saying go straight target golf because I don't like that either. But if you had trees lining and actual trees or bushes, not just like a tree in one spot and another one 10 yards ahead of it where they can go underneath and around if they have to. Like, they're going to do that.
Like Gillette said, they can play all those shots.
Yeah.
Like,
so, and I mean, I know why they don't do that, because they don't want eights and nines. Like, those will happen.
They happen anyways.
It's the classic balancing act of, we need to make it difficult, but we can't make these guys look not like pros.
Yep.
People are going to watch them not hit. But again, we've talked about that's why people love the U.S. Open and British Open. It's to see guys struggle. To see guys actually work, play hard, and not like, just score all the time.
Shoot even par. That's still good golf.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely. If the conditions are dictating that everyone is three over and you shoot even par, that's still a great tournament to watch.
Well, even just think of this week. Sure, those guys played well to get them into that position all week. But Taylor and Phil and the top players, the ones that played well in tough conditions, were rewarded by it. The ones that didn't play well fell completely off the face of the leaderboard.
Yeah, that was a crazy leaderboard.
It just...
Yeah. It but
just
it was everyone that played well in tough conditions that ended up being in the top.
It seems weird to me that they go out of their way to make the greens so hard and so fast, but they don't do anything else on the course.
Yeah.
Like, they don't alter it in any other way.
Yeah, why make guys look like idiots on the green when they could... Make them look like idiots
off the tee.
Off the tee.
Because all of a sudden, if you narrow a fairway and they can't hit driver, that changes a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Like,
maybe the shorter hitters are still confident hitting driver because maybe they're more accurate.
It is always fun to see the shorter hitters play well in bomber courses.
Yeah, you can even the playing field is all I'm saying. You don't have to change the golf balls or change the equipment.
Yeah,
there's ways.
We know that the equipment's changed the game. Now. Change the courses to counteract that a little bit.
If the longest hitters are the best players that week, they're going to win. That's just the way it is because they're just better at hitting the golf ball.
Like, but I think they do need to make some changes because, like, Torrey Pines was a perfect example. Like, Mark Leishman hit, what, two fairways on Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And didn't make a bogey?
Putted exquisitely.
Yeah, he putted amazingly, but he really shouldn't have been able to hit the green from being 40 yards right of the fairway he was trying to hit.
Yeah. Happened a lot, too.
But so, I mean, they'll fix it, I imagine. But
all right, you want to tie a bow on this thing with our picks?
Yeah, let's get to recap,
well,
I guess.
Recap it
so we'll get
want.
To recap, and then we got to put a little bit more effort in this next 100 to set the tone for the next tournament.
Yeah,
just like time. Instead of 1 minute, maybe a minute and a half.
Yeah, sure. So pick recap at Perfect. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Matty B won again.
Let's do it.
He's now at 7 points. He had Dustin Johnson 32nd, Patrick Cantlay 11th, and Jordan Spieth with a heck of a Sunday for 9th.
Let's go.
For That's an crazy. 18 average.
That's a greasy third pick, but still, whatever.
I finished Within second this week. I have 0 points. I had Brent Snedeker miss the cut. That's a 69. Scott Piercy was 18th, and Daniel Berger was 5th for a 30.67 average. You're probably wondering why I put the decimal point in there.
Oh, I am.
Because Bronell finished 3rd. He had Day 4th, Chesrevy 25th, and Casey 64th for a 31 average.
Ah, the old .33 got you again.
Paul Casey was Paul Casey was top 15 all week and then literally shit his pants on Sunday. Like, there was...
Everywhere.
And then
brown stuff.
The Randy man there had Aaron Baddeley 25th, Chris Baker, who was right up there early, and then finished 38th, and Adam Landry missed the cut for 69 for a 44 average.
What's the season point total then?
7220.
Ooh. Whatever. You guys are going to need to win a big tournament here soon.
Yeah.
Genesis is in the 3-point tournament. No.
No.
So we're heading to Genesis, to Riviera.
I'm pretty sure if you just swept the majors in the Olympics, you would win the whole year.
Be close. I don't think you can do it unless all the other ones are getting.
We'll find out when I do it.
60%.
Yeah, because that gets you 20 points.
All right. Riviera we head.
Yeah.
Big old stack field.
Speaking of long bombers, last two winners, J.B. Holmes and Bubba Watson.
Yeah. Yeah. So guys that can work the course. Bubba's won here twice.
At least.
I think it's
might
twice.
Be three.
Might be three.
And like it's a, like people love this course.
This is like a lot of guys' favorite tournament of the year.
This might be a bucket list course.
Yep. A lot of guys love it. Huge field. Like stacked. Smaller field. Stacked field. Very, very worthwhile. But I think CBS covers this one again, doesn't they?
Yep.
We didn't talk about how brutal Pebble Beach coverage is. You barely get to see any shots.
Yep.
It's terrible. CBS stinks except for the Masters.
They show a ton of like shots of the ocean and people.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
otters, like they were showing otters for like 15 seconds at a time.
I don't know, that thing, that might have been Golf Channel, never mind. They released that video of like a drone through all of Pebble Beach and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think that was CBS. No. So yeah, we're off and running. Heavy.
We got four pretty sick groups here.
Four sick groups. Do you want to do Canadians real quick first?
Yep. Taylor.
What if?
Hadwin, Connors, and Sloan.
Roger.
Raj needs a week.
Yeah. Roger's made 2 of 10 cuts. Sorry to bring that up, Roger, but got to turn it around, bud.
We know what that
the
means.
Only two. I almost said the only 2-time guest. Adam Stanley's also been on twice.
Yep.
You know
but
what?
But Raj needs
Raj
to.
Needs.
He needs 3 times.
Yeah, needs to be back on the pod for the bump.
He needs that bump. We talked about it. Gleg's got a bump. Arguably, Nick Taylor got the bump, too. Because I don't think he's joined any other podcast since he was on ours.
Big bump.
Big bump. The biggest kind.
Yep.
And it only took 12 weeks. He was episode 87. I don't think it's been 12 weeks, though. I think he was on just before, like, November, like, right around Remembrance Day.
He was definitely 87, though.
Yep.
Look at these groups. Bubba, Phil, and Brooks.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Rory. It's like an interesting mix of people.
Rory, DJ, Cantlay. Whatever.
Oh. Whatever. That one's awesome.
That's the group.
Yeah. Tiger, JT. Again, they're always paired together.
Always. And love playing together.
They got Steve Stricker with them, who's playing in his 500th career.
That's just
tour start.
That's just Tiger probably texting him saying, this is who I want to play
with.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm playing with Steve.
Yeah.
I'm playing with Steve. And then JT's my boy.
He might have made all the pairings.
Well, Stricker. Coincidence, Stricker's the Ryder Cup captain.
Well, that's what I mean. They're just buddies.
Yeah,
but he's got. If he doesn't.
Oh, Tiger's on the Ryder Cup team. Let's make no bones
maybe
about it.
I haven't seen the standings.
Oh, he's a captain's pick. He doesn't even need to make it in the standings.
And then Rom, Rose, and JB.
Just JB because he's defending champ.
Yeah.
That might. Rom might get hot.
Yep.
Like under the collar, you mean?
Yep. Yeah, I don't mean good. I mean, like, he might be fuming at JB.
Mm hmm.
Put the hothead with the slow guy. Savvy. Tiger move. Now he's eliminated Rom from the tournament.
And that's
yep. Done. He's out. He's actually eliminated Brooks probably too because he probably can't stand Bubba, even though they've been teammates.
And Phil. I don't think he likes Phil either.
Yeah. So Phil bombs playing with Brooks. Yeah, that's Tiger's smart.
Phil's missing the cut this week for sure.
This is the tournament Tiger hosts. It's absolutely what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I just put that together in my head.
took you a little bit, but you got there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, picks?
Sure.
All right, well, I won, so I get to go first, as always. Seems like it's a regular thing. I was really toying with the idea of Rom or Rory, but I'm going to take Rory. Have to. First week at number one.
Yep.
So I'm going to take Rory first.
Yeah,
then
really screwed me there.
Loop back around to me for fourth. I'm going to take... I think I said Patrick Cantlay. Xander Schauffele. I'm going to take Xander Schauffele. And then my third pick, I'm going to take Colin Morikawa, who I did not look at world rankings. I thought he was 70th. He's actually up to 53rd. So he falls outside top 50. I can take him as my third pick.
Yep. I pick second. Since you took Rory on me, I guess I'll go JT.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, arguably the hottest golfer in the world right now.
Arguably, yep.
Then I'll take DJ because I think it's my first time I've been able to take him this year.
I think just that, yep.
And then I'll go JB, defending champion. Why not?
Good. All right, Bruno, what do you got?
Well, I'm taking Jon Rahm. Everybody knows. Yeah,
everybody knows I'm taking Jon Rahm.
He was T9 here last year in his tournament debut.
All right.
My next pick, I really struggled between Tiger, Cantlay, and Bubba. But I just read this stat. Bubba's won this event in each of the last three even-numbered years.
So it is three times.
He's won in 14, 16, and 18. So I'm taking him.
Yeah. Ooh, you're a big, you're a big stats guy.
I had Tiger. I'm switching him to Bubba.
Big stats guy.
All of his other five cuts made, he's went for a top 20 also here. So
okay.
Not bad. And then my third pick's Chucky Three Sticks, Charles Hall. Nice.
Best part about all of this is I didn't pick Tiger, but I can also still cheer for him.
Yep.
Because if he wins, none of you do.
Yeah, you can just pick him in DK too if you want.
I don't know if I'm going to commit to him in DK. I should bring back in the next 100 here. Next 100, once I turn the clock into 101, I might have to bring in my DK corner again.
How much is he?
I think he's like 10 million. 10,000. 10 million. 10
million. You can't 10, pick him. You can't pick him. You don't have enough money.
10,000. I think he's one of the top five.
Should we get to
might
the
be
doc?
Shade under. Oh, yeah. Dr. Randall Meiser.
Oh, he made picks.
Yeah. New listeners, this is our fourth member of the pod. Dr. Randall Meiser.
He only does two things. Anyways, going to trust the algorithm again this week. Put it in. Numbers that came out, 108, 84, and 15 in the field. 108 is Cameron Tringali.
Okay.
Number 84 is Patrick Rogers. And number 15 is Kevin Chappell.
He ain't winning.
But if any of these guys drop out.
Okay.
He's got number 69, Colin Morikawa.
Okay.
Or number 49, Brooks Koepka.
Wow, so, Randy just missed.
Just missed hitting a big one.
None of those three guys are dropping out.
Doubtful. Not out of Riviera.
None of them. Rogers, though.
None of them ever have. But he has to put
Rogers and Chappell both have injury history.
Remember when I boldly predicted Rogers would be top 10?
What did he finish?
Like dead last. Fucking sucked.
I love how you brought it up.
Nothing is better than the Bronel overreaction takes when he's like, Streelman might win this thing.
Fuck it, I'm taking Kevin Na. Oh, if Kevin Na knew that he picked him, he would drop out. He would withdraw. Because why save yourself the embarrassment?
I'm definitely going to hammer Bubba this week, though.
On bets?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
You're really buying
I'm
into
all
that.
In. Top 10 bets, even. Whoever he's playing in the first round.
I got to stop making those golf parlay bets. Like the
who's going to win the matches? They're so random.
I think I went 0 for 6 on the one I did this week.
Golf betting stinks.
Because the ties are like 9 to 1.
Yeah, they rarely happen.
No.
You just got to take like 6 ties, hope one hits and make
individuals.
$5.
Six individual ties and
yes,
hope
Yes, not
one.
A parlay.
And hope 2 hit.
Well, 2 hit and you're laughing.
Yeah,
but you just need one to hit, and you're making slight money. Yeah,
making a little bit of shade over even,
or you're down 6 units just like that.
Yeah, bada bing, bada boom.
Might just go half units.
Yeah. All right, units. That wraps it up for unless you got anything else. Episode 100. Nope. Episode 100 in the books. Yep. Big thanks to Graham Dillette. Big thanks to new listeners that have made it all the way to the end of the episode. That's congrats to you. But for those of you that are still around, again, I can't stress this enough. Follow us on social media. If you like the pod, if you like this 100th episode, subscribe, rate us, do all that stuff. Help us.
Tell your aunt and uncle.
Yeah, climb the standings.
Yeah, take their accounts, log in. They ain't going to notice.
If you live in Saskatchewan, help the boys out. Oh, and don't forget DTG100 on Player Golf. PLYRGolf.com. Use promo code DTG100. But until then, we'll be back next week with episode 101. But until then, it's time for us to hit the clubhouse.